We have had a couple of good days. Our pre-convention activities were fun and fast and furious. We had a Family Feud game that raised a lot of money on Thursday night. We heard from our president, who was taped on our Newsline television show, President Rick Abono. Thanks to Lee Martin and his team, we're going to have a great convention today. We had a lot of workshops yesterday, and everything went really, really well. So I look forward to a full and packed agenda today and lots of good stuff to be shared with my Federation family. First up, we're going to have our invocation by Minister Abby Fleener. And Abby, are you with me?
I am.
All right. You can take it away, please.
Thank you. I am amiss, though. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome, and I'm sorry.
That's okay. Good morning, all. And could we please bow? Dear Heavenly Father, I'd like to thank you today for allowing us to join the Indiana NFB State Convention. Please help us all to follow in your footsteps and be kind and good to each other. Please be with us today and help us to pass information to those who need it. Guide us to be respectful and helpful to all, and just help us have a great convention, Lord. We know that without you, it would not be possible. In Jesus' name we ask this. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much. All right. Hope everybody's up and alive and kicking, because we're getting ready to have a door prize here. Is my door prize person on the line today? We're going to have a door prize as soon as she gets ready. Michael Ball. All right. I got a message that she's here. She needs to be unmuted. Michael Ball. It's under her name.
All right. Good morning.
Morning.
Okay. Let's start this off with a big one. We're going to start today with a $50 door prize. So as a friendly reminder, if you are called for a door prize, you could raise your hand in Zoom. You can text me or you can email me. My information was sent out in an email this morning to all convention registrants. But I do encourage you to raise your hand if you can. So this first winner today we have is Hassan Bokhari. Hassan Bokhari. You have 30 minutes, Hassan, to claim your prize. Thank you, sir.
Hassan Bokhari. All right. All right. So hope Hassan's listening and he'll claim $50 this morning. Up next, we have our pledge, we're going to have some of our youngest members say the pledge and the brand promise. So, all right, let's hear it from our youngest Federation members, Jada and Jordan.
And I'm going to say the pledge. I pledge to participate actively in the efforts of the National Federation of the Blind to achieve equality, opportunity, and security for the blind, to support the policies and programs of the Federation, and to abide by its constitution.
I am Jada, and I will be doing the brand. The National Federation of the Blind knows that blindness is not the characteristic that defines you or your future. Every day, we raise the expectations of blind people because low expectations create obstacles between blind people and our dreams. You can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back.
Drum solo I'm hearing.
Yep, color guard and Pledge of Allegiance.
Excellent.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you, guys. Appreciate that.
Mr. President, that was the Pledge of Allegiance was, that was actually a video from the 2018 National Convention.
Excellent, excellent. All righty. So up next, well, I think that deserves a door prize. How about a door prize, Madam Door Prize person? While she's waiting to get together on that, she's muted again. Yeah. We got a fun foil pack agenda. So let's,
okay.
All right.
I'm here.
All right.
All right. I'm excited to give away another door prize. This one is a $20 gift card and it's going to go to Scott Garris. Scott Garris. I'm sure he's here. Scott, you've got a half hour to claim your prize.
All right, Mika, and you may as well stay, unmuted because we are now going to move into our welcome address from our host chapters, which is the Indianapolis chapter and the Circle City chapter of the National Federation of the Blind. So while you have the microphone, Micah, why don't you welcome us, President of the Indianapolis chapter, Micah Ball.
Gentlemen, start your engines. Yeah.
All right. Good morning, everyone. I'm so glad that you are here with us on this nice Saturday at 9 a.m. And you know what? I'm even happier that you can be in your pajamas and none of us even know about it. So welcome to our 2020 National Federation of the Blind Indiana virtual convention. This is our first virtual convention. I'm so excited to see how many of you are registered and how many folks are participating who didn't register. This is one of our biggest conventions in my memory. And I've never been able to welcome everybody to their own homes before, but here I am welcoming you to your own home and to our convention. So we hope that you enjoy your time here. If you're new, please reach out to one of us who have been around for a while. We would love to talk to you and love you into the organization. So thank you again for being here, and I hope that you enjoy your day.
Thank you, Micah. So up next to welcome us to our virtual convention focusing on our future is the president of the Circle City chapter. And let's hear from, is it Lee this morning?
He's asked Florence to speak.
All right, Florence.
Oh, God didn't make little green apples. It don't rain in Indianapolis in the summertime. And there's no such thing as Dr. Seuss, Disneyland, Mother Goose is no nursery rhyme. God didn't make little green apples. It don't rain in Indianapolis in the summertime.
Well, good morning, everybody, and I wanted to welcome everybody to our 2020 convention on behalf of the National Federation of the Blind Circle City Chapter. We hope that each one of you have been enjoying yourself so far and are looking forward to the topics and the agenda that we have scheduled, excuse me, for today. So again, I'd like to welcome everybody.
Thank you, Florence. Thank you. It is indeed a pleasure and a privilege to be the president of this state affiliate. We have a lot of good members working in our organization. And I tell people all the time, Indiana may not be long on funds, but we're long on our commitment to this organization. Some of us have been in for quite some time and some not so long. However, we're all committed to moving our organization forward and helping out in any way we can to make the lives of the blind as successful as possible. It also gives me a great pleasure this morning and privilege. We've been hearing from him this weekend, and he's been with us all weekend in many different capacities in some of our workshops and meeting and at the board meeting last night. But today, our national president, President Mark Riccobono, will give us the presidential report. And without further ado, here is our national president of the National Federation of the Blind, Mark Riccobono.
Well, thank you very much. Good morning, Ron. How are you feeling?
Hey, I'm feeling great, sir. How are you?
Okay, I'm doing great. Except, you know, I haven't been called for a door prize yet. That's the only problem.
Uh-oh. We'll work on that.
We'll work on that, sir.
All right. Well, greetings, fellow Federationists. And, you know, it's always good when we're ahead of schedule already. So that's great. So I'll try to keep us on schedule and not use the extra time up. It is a pleasure to be with you this morning. And I want to send you greetings, not only from myself, since I have the chance to be here, but from the whole Riccobono family. Usually coming to a convention like this, I'm on the road, I'm away from them, but I'll see them at dinner, which is pretty cool. And by the way, thank you, Ron, and to the affiliate. Apparently, as I was leaving to rush over here yesterday to take the board meeting here from our building, a lovely pie showed up from the affiliate. So thank you very much for that. We appreciate that. So I'll talk about that maybe later. So I am talking to you from the Office of the President here at the National Federation of the Blind Jernigan Institute. So while Micah welcomed you to your home, I'm also going to welcome you to our home here at the NFB Jernigan Institute, since this building belongs to all of us. And I'm not in my pajamas. Just want to be clear about that. And, you know, this office, although it's the Office of the President, it has symbols of the organized blind movement in many ways. I'm not sure. I do have my camera on, but way behind me in the distance in the corner, about 10 feet off the ground, is an umbrella. And that's the umbrella that I used for our umbrella mosaic in 2017. It's always fun when new people come to my office and they usually start looking around. And if they get brave after a while, they say, you know, you have an umbrella in your office. And the umbrella's open, and it allows me to tell the story of our umbrella mosaic and creating a Guinness World Record with members of the Federation. So this morning I want to talk to you about the nature of the work that we do, and we could spend a lot of time talking about all of the things that we do. I'm going to try to do this so that I stay on camera, so I'm going to read Braille standing up, so if I'm a little choppy, that's why. And I'm going to talk to you from our building here, and a lot of people think that our national office, that that's where the actions emanate from, and that just simply is not true. I want to emphasize that we are powerful and diverse because of what happens at the grassroots level. I have the responsibility of coordinating our work from this office, and our staff helps with that, but it happens because of what you do coming together in Indiana, along with our other 51 state affiliates to make that happen. Now, you heard the one-minute message to kick off today's convention. And if you haven't memorized the one-minute message, I encourage you to do so. Another important part of our brand is this statement, and that is: the National Federation of the Blind is the only organization that believes in the full capacity of blind people. Now, let me just stop there. That's not the end of the sentence, but a lot of people would say, oh, that's pretty arrogant. Come on, we believe in the full capacity of blind people. And are there other organizations that believe in the full capacity of blind people or say they believe it? Yeah, probably. But we don't stop there. The National Federation of the Blind is the only organization that believes in the full capacity of blind people and has the power, influence, diversity, and determination to help transform our dreams into reality. It's not simply that we believe in blind people. We do something about it. We do something about it every day. And I had the opportunity to write about that in our banquet speech this summer. And if you haven't heard it, reflected on it, I encourage you to do so. So what makes us powerful is we don't just say we believe in blind people. We back it up with action. We back it up with our own lives, really. And COVID-19 has challenged us to do that in new and dynamic ways. And that's why we're together in this forum today. And so I want to talk to you about the nature of what we're doing in the context of our brand and our brand values. So you've probably heard me say now hundreds of times that during COVID-19, we focus on two things: connecting and protecting blind people. And these are some of the things that we do best, right? Connecting, bring people together in a community. community, which we've been doing now here for the last couple days during this convention, starting with the Family Feud. I'm glad Ron Brown pulled it out for us at the last minute there. Thank you, Ron. Having fun, staying connected, getting to know each other at a personal level, having some laughs as the technology doesn't work. And the socialization is fun. The connecting is fun. Getting to know people so that we can rely on them is fun. We also have real work to do. And COVID-19 has taught us that it is more important than ever before that we protect the civil rights of blind people in this country. And not only that, expand them. We have values in our organization. I'm going to talk to you about our six core brand values. And the first is collective action. That is the thing that allows us to be powerful in both connecting and protecting. We recognize that we can do so much more together than we can do as individuals. And so we come together in an organization as we have since 1940 to make a difference for all blind people. And that means we have an organization where you don't get everything you want. I don't get everything you want. Ron doesn't get everything he wants. We compromise with each other to do what's going to work for all of us. That's the nature of a movement, of an organization. And that brings me to the important thing we have always worked on, but we've been trying to emphasize increasingly so and get back to over the last 6+ years. And that's membership. And if you're out there watching this convention, participating in it, and you are not yet a member of our organization, we invite you to do so. If you are out there, I hope you have your membership coin. I have mine here. And we need you to join our organization. We need you to check us out and then come be part of our movement. We need you to help us achieve the collective dreams that we have. I want to thank each and every one of you who is a member of our organization, because that's an important commitment. And not only is it important commitment, it makes a difference in the lives of so many people, including me and my family, on a daily basis. The work that you do as a member of this organization impacts me in a real way, impacts my wife and I as blind people advocating for our daughters in the Baltimore City Public Schools. And let me just say, if you think that the Baltimore City Public Schools looks at Mark and Melissa Riccobono and figures that they better do everything that we say, you're wrong. You're wrong. They don't. And it's unfortunate that they don't do what they need to do for any of the blind kids. But we have to go through the same struggles as other parents. And the reason we can do that, the reason we have the strength to do that, is because of other members of the Federation. Now, in our organization, we have a code of conduct, and that really sets the standard for participation and conduct of members and leaders of the organization. And that document, which you can find on every page of our website, articulates also our commitment to diversity. And I want to tip my hat to this affiliate for being part of the diversity, equity, and inclusion discussion within our organization. You know, we know that we're stronger because of our diversity. We also know that that doesn't make it easy, because there are real questions still to be answered. And we operate this movement in a society that, frankly, has held many groups back, not just blind people, black people, people who are LGBTQ. And the list goes on and on. And we have to operate our organization in that context and realize that social justice is part of what we need to do. And we need to do it authentically from our point of view as blind people. And we need to eliminate the idea that blind people are blind to color, because we know that's simply not true. And so we're doubling down on our efforts to make sure that this organization is as diverse as possible. And if you're someone like me, that's a hard conversation, you know, because as a white male who grew up in the Midwest, who's tried to have good values, who's been open to all sorts of people in my life, felt I was doing pretty good, but certainly in the last 6 months have realized what I wasn't doing so well, and the implicit bias that I might bring to the work that I do, not just within this organization, but outside this organization. And so I want you to know that I'm on that journey with you, and I'm really honored that we have people like Ron and Jean Brown helping us work through that, loving us through that, but also pushing us to ask ourselves the hard questions. I want to underscore one more thing. Diversity, inclusion, membership, that's going to make the difference for what this movement movement does in the future. A lot of other things are going to help, but that's key. That element is key. This organization has always had a degree of diversity since I've been in it. It can be better, and we need it to be better. We want every blind person to contribute to this movement. It is America's civil rights movement, and it is the only organization that believes in the full capacity of blind people and does something about it. So I would encourage you to engage in our membership efforts, our diversity efforts, and please bring your perspectives and ideas to that conversation. Now, another core value we have is courage. And in fact, courage is the thing that has helped us make progress over the last 80 years. So only this organization has stood against some of the most pernicious problems impacting blind people. But we're not done yet. We need the courage to go the rest of the way. We've come a long way, but there are still real problems, and some people feel like the technology we have today, the advances we've made, are enough. It's not enough. It's not nearly enough. But man, our courage is making progress. I was so proud about 3 weeks ago. The United States Commission on Civil Rights has nothing to do with blind people, nothing mostly to do with people with disabilities in the past. But because of our work and our testimony in front of the commission last November, they released a report that called on the nation to eliminate Section 14C of the Fair Labor Standards Act to guarantee all people with disabilities a fair wage. Let's be real. That happened because of the leadership of the National Federation of the Blind. We've been beating on this longer than anyone else. We're not there yet, though. We still have to pass a law that makes it happen. And so I encourage you to get members of Congress in Indiana to support the Transformation to Competitive Employment Act in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. We're making great progress, but we haven't passed the bill yet, so we need to keep going. We have only a handful of co-sponsors in the Senate, and we're gaining people in the House all the time, but we need to get as many people on that bill as possible. We can be proud that we've gotten this legislation and the concept into some of the political platforms, but the words are meaningless until we get a law passed that says you must pay people with disabilities a fair wage like everybody else. And it's because of our leadership that we're going to get there. So continue to pour on the determination, the strength, and get our members of Congress in Indiana to support that legislation. In the meantime, you can do something about it at the state level. Now, Maryland, we've eliminated the use of 14C in the state of Maryland. Alaska's done it. New Hampshire's done it. You can do it in Indiana. You can get your state legislature to say that no employer in the state can use that provision of federal law. And I would encourage us to do that, because effectively we're going to eliminate it for blind people whether Congress acts or not. But we're going to get to a day when Congress will act. Now, there's also other things that take courage. The COVID-19 situation has given those who want to attack the Americans with Disabilities Act a forum to do so. And this organization has pushed against proposed bills in the past that have attempted to limit the Americans with Disabilities Act. There's a bill in Congress now to say that because of COVID-19, that certain protections of the Americans with Disabilities Act should be put aside. There's a bill specifically called the Safe to Work Act that diminishes the ADA protections during COVID-19. We call foul on that. You don't get to suddenly diminish our civil rights protections because the nation is in a pandemic. We don't get to do that for anybody. And so we're pushing against this law just like we have before. But it's not just about pushing back. It's also about pushing in. You've already heard at this convention about the fact that many blind people have been adversely affected by COVID-19. Most certainly our blind entrepreneurs, our Randolph Shepherd vendors, who have pretty much been sidelined because of the current situation. And the government agencies, the COVID relief bills have done nothing to support them yet. So we continue to push for an appropriation in the next COVID relief bill that would specifically support blind vendors and the disparate impact that COVID-19's had on them. And so I appreciate this affiliate helping to lead the charge in that way. The The House has already included that provision in a COVID-19 bill, but we need the Senate to do so and the White House to support it. So be on alert. We do believe this is going to be taken up one of these times soon by the Congress, and we're going to need you to act. Excuse me. Okay. Another value we have is respect. Our faith in the capacity and dignity of blind individuals is at the heart of our mission. We assert the right to be treated fairly and equally, and we reject society's low expectations that come from the ingrained belief that blindness is the characteristic that exclusively defines us. Respect. And I know this affiliate's working on respect because I heard you talking about the thing that I always talk about first under respect, and that is the right of blind people to be parents, caregivers, grandparents, guardians of any sort. And we have been leading the charge on this issue for a long time. And there are still, even in 2020, so many situations where blindness is used against parents, caregivers, guardians to diminish their ability to care for those they love. And that's just simply not fair. We need to protect the rights of blind people to be parents, caregivers. You think about, it's not just parenting. Think about our parents who are all getting older. And I know I'm an only child, so I'm it for my parents. And I fear what might happen if some official, health official or government official decides that I'm not fit to do so simply because I'm a blind person. My parents don't have another child to turn to. And that's my responsibility. That's part of fulfilling the circle of family. And that right is being diminished by people that really don't understand the capacity of blind people. So we need to continue to protect this right. I applaud our Indiana affiliate for continuing to march to the Capitol to say we need a bill to protect blind caregivers. We've passed this bill in a number of states. We're prepared to help you do it. And your doing so makes a difference. You can visit blindparents.org and learn about our mentoring program where we try to connect blind parents with mentors. And that's, you don't have to be a parent. If you want to be a parent someday and you're looking for someone to talk to about how do blind people do the things parents do, that network is there for you. This network in the Federation is here for you. I know when my son was born in 2006, our first child, it's now coming up on 14 years ago. Unbelievable. You know, the doctor came by and said, you know, we looked around in there. We didn't find a manual. And I thought that was really cool because she didn't say that because we were blind parents. She said that because we were new parents. And that's the truth for all new parents. You can read all the books you want. It's on the job experience that really makes a difference. And the love you put into your children, that's what makes the biggest difference. For blind people, we shouldn't be prevented from doing that. Another value we have is full participation. We assert that blind people have a right to live fully and equally in the world. And from this flows our expectations that society will not artificially prevent blind people from full participation. We know that the world is better off when all of its citizens can contribute the full range of their talents. And this might be one of the most important things I'm going to say to you today. We need you to participate. We need you to go out and vote in the fall elections coming up on November 3. I haven't looked at what the situation is in Indiana. Maybe you can vote now. I can tell you in Maryland, I've already voted. We need every blind person to go out and vote. And I get it. Voting's not accessible everywhere. We still need you to vote. We need you out there voting because the more blind people we have putting their voice in the mix of the American democracy, the more potential progress we can make. And I'm not here to tell you who to vote for or how to vote. I'm just telling you, we need you to vote. We need you to vote for this movement because that's how we're going to get our issues across also to the elected members. Now you can go to nfb.org/vote, V-O-T-E, and get all sorts of information. When you do vote, we need you to complete the blind voters survey that you can find at nfb.org/vote. And whether you have a good experience or a bad experience, we need you to fill out that survey. because it is the most comprehensive data set on blind people, our experience voting. We've been collecting data in every presidential election since 2008. Also, on election day, we'll be running a blind voters hotline. You'll get the information on our listservs. If you go to vote on November 3 and you run into an issue with a voting machine or a polling place, we have a hotline you can call, and we'll give you technical assistance about what to do in that moment. I recognize that Indiana may not be where we need it to be in terms of accessible voting. We still need you to figure out a way to vote. Now, I'm not telling you to put your life on the line by going to a polling place in person if you're not comfortable with that, but don't let the current situation prevent you from voting. And yes, we may not have complete equal access to a private independent ballot in Indiana today, but your voting is going to help us get there. Catalog your story. We in this organization are working for complete accessibility in voting. That means voter registration is accessible. That means blind people have access to a private, independently fillable ballot in any form, whether it's at the polling place, whether it's via mail, or any other means that's permitted to vote. And eventually, we're going to get to a place where we have that everywhere. And we're making great progress. We have, I don't know how many, I lost track of how many states in this election cycle we have sued, complained to, are negotiating with. And frankly, we have much more knowledge about accessible voting than they. And we set the groundwork for this years ago. 5 years ago in Maryland, we won a landmark case that gave blind people access to absentee voting. The state of Maryland said that you have access to voting. You can go to a polling place. And we said access to one form of voting is not equal access. If we hadn't fought that case 5 years ago and won, blind people would be in a very different place today. So document your voting experience, but please vote. It's the most important thing we can do. And if you haven't come across it, check out our YouTube channel so you can hear our little ode to voting in the spirit of Alexander Hamilton, done by one of our 2020 scholarship winners. Now, we have other things we want to do. We want to gain access to medical devices and exercise equipment. We want Congress to create standards to do this. So we've created a bill we call the GAIN Act. Greater accessibility and independence through technology. We all know the impact of technology in our lives, especially now because of COVID. And the government should create the standards to make this a requirement in all of the industries. Also, we need to do more to get our message out, our message of public awareness and the capacity of blind people. And this is an important month to do that because we're in Meet the Blind Month. And this is the time when we really try to push out to get people to hear our message, to know our message of empowerment and the true capacity of blind people. I encourage you to share your ideas about what more we can be doing, especially in this socially distanced time, to create understanding about the capacity of blind people. Now, a bill that we think we're going to get passed before the end of the year is the Access Technology Affordability Act. And we really need you, not right at this moment, but definitely tomorrow and Monday when this convention's over. We need you to call Congress about this. We need to pass the Access Technology Affordability Act. This would give a refundable tax credit to blind people for the purchase of access technology for the blind. And it doesn't do everything we want, but the impressive thing is it's a starting point. It has bipartisan support. I mean, hardly anything in Congress, hardly anything, even COVID relief barely has bipartisan support. We have 128 co-sponsors on this bill in the House from both sides of the aisle. And some of the most extreme sides of both aisles support this bill. We have 26 co-sponsors in the Senate. We can give you the bill numbers if you want, but the important thing is we need you to get on the phone on Monday and get members of Congress to support the Access Technology Affordability Act. We believe that when the White House and Congress decide to really negotiate a COVID relief bill, that this has a very good shot of being included. And so while the November election may bring us to a lame duck session, we expect some things to move in Congress, and this is one. And so please don't give up. Continue to call and put the pressure on Congress to get this bill passed. It will set us on a path of having a tax credit that blind people can build on in the future for not just being a blind person, but for actually spending our own dollars to purchase technology that benefits us. Access to technology is important. important. But Congress is not the only way to get it done. We've worked with the Social Security Administration to make sure that all of their check-in kiosks and all their field offices are accessible. And we're working now on getting them to implement that. We've been pushing like crazy on the rideshare companies, both Uber and Lyft, to stop the discrimination against blind people who use guide dogs. And I know it's still happening, but we are making progress, and we're evaluating right now, going back to court with both of these companies to push them even harder on civil rights protections for blind people. So keep collecting data and sharing it with us because it's important. We all are experiencing, especially if you're a blind student or you have a blind child in a public school today, or you're a blind parent, the fact that educational software is just simply not accessible in so many places. I could talk to you all day about this as a blind parent working with two blind daughters who are doing online learning in public schools. There are so many software packages that are not accessible. We can do something about that. We need our members in Indiana to point parents to our educational technology survey. We're collecting data on the technologies that work, those that don't, so that we can focus our energy on targeting the biggest companies to get the best advantage out of getting them to be accessible. And we're making progress. You heard at the national convention that we've signed an agreement with Pearson, and that came directly out of a resolution we passed in 2019 that finally got their attention. And we have a strong agreement with them to work together on accessibility. And we've told them very clearly that we're going to hold them accountable. And they're working hard, and we are going to hold them accountable. And it's going to make a difference in the future. But that's just one big company. There are many others. And so we need you to continue to collect data, submit data to us about educational software, and help the parents in Indiana work through the problems, because at the end of the day, we need to keep moving forward in schools today. And so we need a temporary solution, which is the network that we have in this organization. Now, we still think that Congress needs to pass a law to create standards for educational technology. We've been pushing a bill now the idea of a bill for about a decade. And you can see that had we gotten people's attention, had they been doing something about it, schools would have been in a great position for COVID to work with blind students. Well, they didn't listen. But this is a great opportunity for us, because the schools that didn't get it, the agencies that didn't get it, the members of Congress that didn't get it, they're going to get it now because they're living it. And so we're going to have a great chance of getting a bill, an even stronger bill, in the next Congress. And we need you to continue to collect those stories. You know, healthcare has always been a topic of interest to us, but of course, for all of us, it's at the front of our minds, right? Because we're living in a pandemic, and access to healthcare, telemedicine, medical devices, websites, we all have to live with it in a real way. We're continuing to push forward on this. We have a working group that's looking specifically at the accessibility of medical devices. A lot of medical devices have touch screens that are not usable by blind people. We're also challenging health organizations. We're challenging a hospital in North Carolina that refused to provide Braille copies of bills to a patient, and therefore the patient didn't know or understand exactly what they owed because they refused to provide Braille. We have people who are having trouble signing up for available health care because the websites are not accessible. These are all things we're working on, and I think you know that well in Indiana, because we're also working together with our affiliate to push on the public entities in the state of Indiana to get accessibility to forms to apply for public benefits and programs. It's not just healthcare, though. We want to work, and we want to pay taxes, as crazy as it is. The IRS has made it very difficult for us to pay taxes because it doesn't provide us with accessible formats, especially of the notifications it sends us about what we owe. So we signed an agreement this year with the IRS to get accessible notifications. And what will happen eventually is, you're a blind person, you'll be able to tell them, I want all of my IRS communications in this format, and they'll automatically send them to you. You don't have to ask every time. If you want hard copy Braille, they're going to give you hard copy Braille, and you don't have to fight about it. This is huge for our organization, for our members, and for setting a new standard of equal access in government. Another area of full participation for us is jobs, and I could talk a long time about jobs. We're working on making sure the job search sites are accessible. The testing assessments that you have to fill out to get into a job are accessible. The application and on the job working with employers to make sure they're building accessibility into their technology. Employment is a very hard area because it's hard to get legal settlements that impact more than one blind person. So it's a tricky area for us to navigate, but we continue to find ways to push forward with employers and to set a high standard of employment. And we look for ways to improve the employment provisions of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And that brings me to our legal program. You know, as America's civil rights organization, we have the biggest legal program for blind people anywhere in the country. And there are many, 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 many more cases out there than we can take as an organization. So we look for these things. We look for systemic cases. That means cases that are going to impact more than one blind person. We look for ways to push the law forward. You know, we don't bring a lot of web accessibility cases anymore. We've made the law there. We've gotten the courts to say what we need them to say. We can bring more cases, but we would just be repeating work we've already done. We once in a while bring a web accessibility case if it will advance what we've done. We intervened in the Domino's Pizza case, which was being appealed to the Supreme Court. And thank you, Supreme Court, for not taking this ridiculous case, where Domino's basically refused to make their website accessible, said they didn't have a responsibility to. We intervened in that case, because if web accessibility was going to go to the Supreme Court, we don't want anybody else but the National Federation of the Blind arguing that case. But we don't bring a lot of those cases because we've already set the precedent in the courts we need. We bring other case. So we look for systemic cases and we look for things that are going to advance the priorities of this organization as set forth by our convention. We spend millions of dollars on legal a year, and I can tell you this year we have spent a lot of money defending voting for blind people in many, 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 many states. I don't feel bad about that because I think we have now changed the landscape of voting forever for blind people going forward. And our legal work has done that. But all that's to say we can't take every case. What still works best for our full participation is for each and every one of you to become better and better self-advocates and to help each other with that advocacy. That brings us to scale much faster and much better than bringing court cases that take a long time and are hard to get adequate relief out. By the way, I want to say one more thing about legal case, and that is we're hearing a lot about the lawyers that bring frivolous lawsuits. We don't do that. Our organization, we sign public agreements. You can view all of our settlement agreements at nfb.org/legal. Some people say that we participate in our legal program in order to make money. You can read our 990 and our financial statements. We don't make any money on legal. We spend a lot of money. It's not a moneymaker for us. It's a huge money loser. But at the end of the day, it's a huge civil rights gainer. And that's why we do. So many other areas we're working on. Autonomous vehicles. You're going to see blind people using self-driving vehicles very soon. And that's because of the work of our organization that really started 10 years ago with our Blind Driver Challenge. I know that Newsline is big in Indiana. By the way, hats off to Indiana for being really a nationwide leader in leveraging our Newsline system. I'm not going to talk more about that, but I will highlight that we've released the new mobile app for Newsline, which includes the core elements of the KNFB reader technology. So you can download Newsline. You can take a picture of a piece of print and read it because of the technology that we now make freely available to blind American. Education. So much we're doing in education. Thank you to Indiana for having some students in our Braille enrichment program, our in-home edition, where we taught over 270 children and their families Braille this summer through our virtual in-home academy. We sent families 7 pounds of Braille-related materials through the mail, and your work, your follow-through with those families in Indiana has made a great difference. We continue to do mentoring in this organization. We have a career mentoring program that's run from our national office. I would encourage Indiana to get involved with that and to think about setting up a mentoring program that coordinates with our national career mentoring efforts. Here, Anil Lewis is our executive director for blindness initiatives. He coordinates that. Not only do we believe in blind people, we give them the tools to be successful. So you know that we give away long white canes to any blind person who wants them. We give away Slate and Stylus, any blind person that needs a tool to read Braille. We don't want access to the tools to become an issue. Also, we continue to pursue the participation of blind people in science, technology, engineering, and math. We've been doing this now for well over 15 years. Shout out to Micah Ball, who was one of our early students and has been a huge player in a number of our STEM programs. We now have taken our efforts to do spatial engineering research to find out how we not only get blind people into engineering, but how we use the authentic experience of blind people to impact the engineering education industry more broadly. And that is really cool. There are dozens of other programs I don't have time to talk to you about that we're working on to impact the full participation of the blind in society. Okay, value number 5 is democracy. That's obvious. We're an organization run by blind people. Blind people make the decisions. We elect blind people to steer our organization. The process of being a member and having a voice in this movement is core to what we do. And I'm proud of what we did this summer for our national convention. Other organizations, they shut down. They said, you know, we're just not going to have a meeting. Or if we're having a meeting, we're not going to do serious business. We said, no, we're not going to do that. If we're going to have a convention, blind people need to continue to run the convention. And so we built a way for blind people to participate, to vote actively in our convention. And man, was it a great convention. It's the largest gathering that I've participated on Zoom anywhere, and I've been in a lot of Zoom meetings over the last 6 months. I hope that you'll decide to be with us at our next convention, national convention, which will be in New Orleans. Now, we don't know if it'll be virtual or in person or a hybrid. We're hoping we'll be in person. Last time we were in New Orleans was 1997, our largest convention ever. We're going to have a convention, and it's going to be great. We need you to be there July 6th to 11th. Next year to be part of the democratic process of this organization. Now, why am I part of the democratic process in this organization? Well, for one reason, and that is the value proposition of what this organization does for me. We describe it this way. I am filled with hope, energy, and love by participating in the National Federation of the Blind. Because my expectations are raised, my contributions make a difference to me and to others, and I can celebrate the realization of my dreams with my Federation family. I participate in the democracy that we have in this movement because it impacts my life every day. And I'm here on a cloudy Saturday because I know that this gathering is going to give me the hope and strength that I need to face the battles ahead that we're going to have as blind people. And that leads me to the last value that we have in this organization, and that is love. Love is the feeling that the Federation provides the support of this network. Love is what drives what we do in this movement. Love is the reason that we dedicate hundreds of extra hours, thousands of extra dollars to making sure that this movement is available to every blind person. And if you're not sure about what love means in this organization, go back and look at what we've done in the last 6 months. Blind people in this organization in Indiana and all across the country have responded so amazingly to COVID-19. We've decided that COVID-19 is not going to stop us, that we're even going to enhance the work that we're doing. We've been onboarding new members in a real way. We've been doing real outreach. Blind people have been organizing efforts to get groceries to blind people and transportation to folks that need to get to testing centers, and the stories are endless. And that's because of love. And that's why I'm here with you today, because I am blessed to have this family network that we have in this organization. And I wish more blind people would take advantage of it. It does take real energy and it takes real dollars to do what we need to do. And I heard the PAC report last night. Congratulations to Indiana for continuing to move up in the PAC plan. We can do better. I'd love to see folks who are here today decide they're going to throw in $5 a month towards supporting our ongoing work. Our pre-authorized contribution program gives us the discretionary dollars to be in the places we need to be. Those dollars aren't tied to government grants or restrictions. If we need to go sue a state over voting, we can use those dollars to do so. We can't do that with our grant money from the National Science Foundation. If we need to go help a blind parent with a lawyer because they've had their child taken away, we can do that with those PAC dollars because they're not restricted. I need you to go to nfb.org/PAC, that's P-A-C, and fill out the form. You can increase your contribution. You can make a new contribution. And by the way, if you're in a position to give a gift to the national organization this month, our partners are doubling that gift. We've been working with Vispero. They're the maker of JAWS and Zoom Text and many other products. I have a braille display here on my desk from Vispero. They've committed to match every dollar contributed to this National Federation of the Blind during the Meet the Blind Month, the month of October, up to $50,000. And we want that $50,000 from Vispero. The reason they've made that commitment is because they have experienced the love that we share in this organization. They understand that we're not in it for anything else but to make a difference in our lives and the lives of other blind people. If you're in a position to make a contribution, I know people are hurting. I know there's been bad circumstances, but if you can do something this month, it's going to be double whatever you do. And if you can make that $5 commitment every month through our PAC plan, it's going to make a huge difference in what we do going forward. Look, there's a lot more we're doing, and it happens because of the work that we do together. And so I want to leave you with the promise that we make to each other in this organization. And that is, together with love, hope, and determination, we transform dreams into reality. That's why I show up here, and I'm blessed to have the opportunity to share with you a little bit of what we've been doing on the national stage. And I know that's why you show up, because you recognize that we're better together. We're stronger together. We're going to work through the hard things together, and we're going to do so with love, hope, and determination. I want to close also by thanking our leaders, the board, the NFB of Indiana. This is not an easy time to lead. And I think this board, all of you who have agreed to serve and who have made this convention possible, who have continued to move forward, are exemplary of what we say when we say together with love, hope, and determination. So I love you all. I appreciate you, and I'm thankful for your work. Let's go build the National Federation of the Blind.
All right. All right. Excellent presentation, sir. And we love you as well. We love our organization. We love our movement. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that great presentation.
I'm looking forward to trying the pie, too.
All right. Yes, sir. I'm glad you got it. Let us know how it is. It's supposed to be one of the best places in Baltimore, by the way, I'm told.
Yeah, so this pie is called a Baltimore bomb, which I got to say, when something shows up at your door that's called a Baltimore bomb, you kind of got to worry, right? So, I had to look up what a Baltimore bomb is. Now, this is a pie that came from Dangerously Delicious Pies, which is a great pie place in Baltimore. Okay. And this apparently is a chess pie that has mixed into it burger cookies, which are a very Baltimore unique thing. They're sandwich cookies with chocolate in the middle. This pie has to weigh, I don't know, 10 pounds. It's crazy. So I'm going to bring a slice of it to the banquet, and that'll be my banquet meal.
There you go. Excellent. But make sure the kids don't get any late night, because they're going to be up and running. Lee Martin coordinated that effort. Thank you so much, Lee. Okay, let's, is our door prize ready, lady ready? Because we need a door prize for that outstanding presentation.
Yeah, we do. We sure do. And I'm ready to give one. And actually, I'm ready to give that same $50 that I tried to give to Hassan earlier, but he unfortunately didn't claim it. So sad day for you, but happy day for you, Jack Falachek. You are the new winner of $50 if you claim it.
All right, Jack Falachek. All right. Excellent. So we are going to get ready to hear from our guest speakers today. Is Jessica Sutherland on the line? And if you are, raise your hand so we can unmute you and Jasmine Quiet. Are you on the line? You can raise your hand. All right. We are proud to present our next guest, and President Riccobono talked about it in his presidential report, about our rights to parent as blind people. Here in Indiana, we've had a couple of tests to that right to parent, and that test had great outcomes. So I'll let her tell you all about it. To present my right to parent, here is Jessica Sutherland.
Thank you, Ron Brown. I am very appreciative for being able to speak again this year. I will start off with what I talked about last year at the convention. I'll just recap a little bit. Well, September 2018, me and my ex-husband, we had our first hearing for a divorce, and he said that he wanted 50-50 custody. I said that I wanted full custody of our daughter, who was 6 at the time, and he ended up getting what he wanted, the 50-50. Our original final hearing was February 20th of 2019. He changed his mind. He said he wanted full custody of our daughter, and I still said I wanted full custody, but in the end, he ended up getting full custody. So I ended up losing my daughter. In the order from the judge, it said the reason that I did not get my child was because my disability could present issues with safety and security of my child and present issues with my ability to parent. Well, after reading that, I contacted the NFB and was directly in contact with Ron Brown's wife. And then I talked to Ron, and we decided that the NFB was going to help me get my daughter back. Well, the NFB, they have done so much for me that I am so grateful. An amicus brief was written, which was submitted to the court, which was basically facts about blindness, about blind parenting, about children who have blind parents, things of that nature. And then we ended up appealing everything. We had a final hearing scheduled. I believe it was June. But it ended up getting rescheduled because of the COVID. We finally had a final hearing this past August on the 5th, and I ended up winning full physical and legal custody of my daughter. So now I have her full time, and I am 100% grateful for everything the NFB has done, everything Ron has helped me with, and I'm just grateful for all the support I had, because that was unbearable time when I did not have my daughter. And I'm just 100% grateful and blessed to have you all by my side. And I'm happy to say my daughter is very happy and blessed to be with me again. And I can't thank everybody enough for all the support and this amazing outcome. And last time I said, you know, I ended with, we may have lost the battle, but we didn't lose the war. Well, this time we lost the battle, but we definitely won this war. And I just want to thank everybody for everything they've done. I'm greatly, greatly appreciative.
Jessica, we appreciate you, and we appreciate you being a part of our organization. And we know that, you know, we don't stand for our kids being taken away from parents simply because they're blind. And in your case, that's what happened. And we're not going to put up with it. And we're glad you had a great outcome from that experience.
Right. Well, I have somebody here that wants to say hi. Aubrey, my Excellent. Daughter, would like to say hi.
Okay. Hi, Aubrey. Are you enjoying your mom's speech today?
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, how old is Aubrey, Jessica?
She's 7 now.
All right. Well, I'm glad you guys are back together again, and you guys have a great and wonderful weekend, and stay with us this weekend because we got more stuff to follow. So Maybe I can, let's see if Jasmine Quiet, if you're on the line, raise your hand. And if not, we will take a couple questions for Jessica. If you guys in the audience have them, please raise your hand.
Mr. President?
Yes, sir.
I was just wondering if Jessica could be a little specific and tell us, how long was your daughter out of your house?
From February 20th of 2019 to, I believe it was August 10th is when she was returned of this year.
Wow. So almost a year and a half.
Yep.
Yeah. And the judge in his infinite wisdom, the first court, wrote it in his decree, mind you, put it down on paper that she was being taken away simply because the mother's blind. It's blatant discrimination. And our national headquarters dispatched Brown, Goldstein, and Levy to help with this, as Jessica said, with an amicus brief, and said, this is not right. Rethink your decision, basically. and so they did. And Jessica went back to court this year, and we were all prepared to go up there to sit in the court with our canes and dogs and the whole nine. And the attorney said that, well, they were going to have it via video and court. And so the outcome was Jessica has her daughter back. Great outcome. Anybody else? All righty. Thank you so much, Jessica. Thank you for all you've done with us.
Well, I appreciate all you guys have done for me.
Excuse me. Somebody had a raised hand, did they say, before we go? Okay. All right.
Sarah Meyer has her hand up.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to unmute her. There she goes.
Okay, Sarah.
Hi. Jessica, thank you so much for sharing your experience. I'm truly so sorry that you had to go through that. I mean, that sounds so painful and traumatic, and but I'm so grateful to hear that this has resulted in a positive outcome. And I just, my heart goes out to you. My prayers are with you that you and your daughter are able to heal from this and move forward. My question is, what have you learned about yourself and about blindness through this experience? Because I'm assuming you probably never anticipated this. No one probably ever does.
Right. I've learned, for one, I never knew the NFB even existed until this happened to me. So I've learned, there's plenty of people out there that's like me. I'm not the only one. There's, great, amazing people that are always there to support you and help you whenever you need it, whether it's just advice or just somebody, to listen and express how you feel too. I've learned that there's a lot of ignorant people in the world that just do not understand blindness or, our ability to do things as blind people and parents. And I've learned also that, I can do anything that I set my mind to. And this whole experience where, I was discriminated against and lost my daughter, it's made me a stronger person all around. It's made me a better mother. And it's opened my eyes to a whole bunch of different things, as in opportunities and just, and I, every chance I get, I now tell people about blindness. I explain to them that we are just like everybody else. We just do things a little bit differently. But overall, honestly, it was a bad experience, but at the same time, it was a good life-changing experience.
Exactly. Final thoughts from me, Jessica.
Mr. President, 0578 has their hand up as well.
All right. And final thoughts, Jessica, from me. I remember a conversation you and I had about this, and you were telling me about how while you guys were married, you raised the child, you sent them off to school, you did their hair, you got them ready and stuff. Did your parenting change after you guys got a divorce? did you stop learning to do those things as a blind mom? I mean, you could do them as a blind mom when you were with the sighted man, but as a blind mom single, did those parenting skills, did you lose those?
I definitely did not.
I didn't think so.
Definitely did not.
All right. Who has their hand up?
0578.
Hi, Ron. Hi, Jessica. This is Donna Williams, and I echo Sarah thanking you to share your story. I too am a single mother, and I had lost my sight after everything was finalized. But what was interesting is he called and said, I heard about your eyes, and then said, we'll be going back to court. And I think he thought that was leverage, that I had lost my sight, and that he would be able, you know, to be able to see our son. But he never thankfully did anything. But for a while, I did live a little bit in fear, wondering when and what if. And because he knew I lost my sight, where is he? And, you know, what's going on around us, my son's safety. But for you, I'm dumbfounded that they would give him sole custody. Like Ron even said, you were caring for her just fine as a married woman up until that point. Yeah. And then to say 100% custody goes to him on top of it because you're blind. I mean, that's blatant. And I'm just done. That's what a court system would say. I mean, there's so much to that statement that it just baffles me. And to do that to you for a year and a half without your daughter every day, I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. But I'm so thankful, like you said, I didn't know much about the NFB or any of it either myself until recently. And look at the support you got and the fight and the battle. Yep. But the end result is exactly what you deserved a year and a half ago.
Exactly. Yep.
And I'm just sorry you had to go through that. But God bless Ron and his wife and the NFB and everybody a part of this. I mean, it's empowering to hear your story, but hear all the work behind the scenes, you know, that just makes everything wild, you know. I'm glad you didn't take longer, or you didn't know for another year or two about the NFB, you know. I mean, that was long enough, but.
Right. It was definitely a God-given answer. The NFB was a God-given answer to me.
Yes. I mean, I always believe things have a reason. I scratch my head sometimes, you know, when I don't get the reason or I can't, you know, but. It just made you that much stronger and better within yourself. So congratulations.
Thank you.
And
all right.
That's awesome.
Thank you guys. Thank you so much. All right. Is Jasmine Quiet on the line yet, guys? If you are, raise your hand and we'll unmute you. And if she is not, I'll just go ahead and let our Federation family know about her and her situation. You guys see her yet?
No.
Okay. All right. Good. Okay. Jasmine is another young lady that is in our organization, guys, and that we are helping, a couple of weeks ago, maybe a good month or so. Yeah, this might have been a month by now. But Jasmine, called and she stated that, one of the things that had happened to her was when her and her husband got divorced, they took our kids too as well, by the way. That's what she told me, about a week or so ago, as a part of this story. They took her kids, but thankfully through her divorce and her attorney, she got her kids back in a pretty record amount of time. So all of that was fine and she was moving on with her life. Jasmine went to school one day and her ex-husband was babysitting for her, watching their daughter, and was supposed to take her to a dance recital while she was at school, and she came home and they were still there, and he said that the recital or something got canceled, but nevertheless they were still at her house. So she asked him to that was fine, and thank him for watching her and that she was home now, he could leave. And he started to argue with her. And so Jasmine sent the kids upstairs. She has a girl and a son. And while they were downstairs, her and her husband, he was continuously arguing with her, and she was asking him to leave, and make a long story short, he started to beat on her, and he hit her in her sides and her legs and her arms, and she yelled upstairs for her daughter to call the police, and the daughter was crying and said, "I can't, I'm too scared to call him." And so she finally got away from him, and she went to dial 911 herself. And while she did that, he left the house and ran out of the house. The police called and said that well, you don't have any bruises on you yet, but take pictures if they show up tomorrow and let us know. So her and her girlfriend did that, and they took the pictures, and consequently the ex-husband was arrested, and all that was fine and dandy. And so they went to court. Now, this is the same court building that I work in, have my vending location in. And so they went to court, and Judge Angie Davis presided over his trial. And he had a bench trial because he didn't want to have a trial for pummeling his wife with 12 jurors looking on, you know, you beating a blind girl up. So he asked for a bench trial. So nevertheless, Jasmine went to court and testified against him, and she thought, well, he'll probably just get a misdemeanor attached to him and have to wear an ankle bracelet, and that'll be that. And the prosecutor prosecuted the case, and she thought the same thing. And also, Child Protective Services was involved, and they testified, you know, that, you know, what had happened and transpired. And so prior to the case and everybody's, all the witnesses testifying, they sent Jasmine to the other room to wait for the outcome. And a few minutes later, prosecutor came over to Jasmine and said, well, the case got dismissed, and they let him walk. And she was like, what? What happened? And the prosecutor said she was outraged, and because the judge said that Jasmine could not see who was beating on her, so therefore we cannot hold this man accountable for beating on her, committing the violence against this lady. And she said to the prosecutor, well, it was my kids, and they were upstairs, and me and him downstairs. You mean to tell me that I didn't know who was beating on me, and it was only us in the house? And the prosecutor said, yeah, I know. And so she was really livid about that, and all of the prosecutors in the building got around the building, and she was just outraged. So she came to us to figure out what she could do about this, because literally the judge said she's blind, she don't know who was hitting on her. We're letting him go. We're taking the restraining order off of him, and so he walked. Now, we've gotten in touch with our Brown, Goldstein, and Levy, and our attorneys, President Rick Bono, asked them to take a look at it and see what could be done. And basically, we're working on this case. We're not sure what the outcome is going to be, because although they may think it's over, and although we may not can do anything legally, but what we can do physically, if Jasmine agrees with it, is we can go down there and we can march around the building, the city county building, and I'd be the first to march around, and we can call this judge out, and we can let him know that this is unacceptable, that just because we're blind, we don't have the capacity to know that if we're in a confrontation with a person one-on-one, we don't know who's beating on us. That's simply unacceptable. We're going to continue to investigate this case to see what we can do. And believe me, again, like Jessica said, we may lose the battle, but we will win the war. I'll take questions and comments about this situation for briefly, and then we'll move on. Raise your hands, please, if you got something to say about this. Okay.
Yeah, Donna Williams is raising her hand. She's still muted. I'm working on that. There she goes. Donna?
All right. Donna?
Yeah, thank you. Ron, when that happened that day, when he beat her up, the police were not called, or they were, they did go, and then they said there were no bruises, but if they show up to take pictures, and then they did show up, the bruises,
yes,
and that's when the police got involved then.
And they arrested him, yes. He ran out of the house, the first time around, and she said, well, he just beat me up, and there are no bruises right now, although the very next day they did show up, and she did have pictures taken, and they went and arrested him. So all the procedures were followed, you know,
right,
by the police. It's just
well,
that the judge...
Well, the children see, can't they? I mean, can the children see?
Yes, they can. So let me tell you about that part of the case. The children were upstairs, and so the prosecutor said that by the children being upstairs, they didn't see their dad hitting on them. And she was, and then she was downstairs with him alone. So had they been downstairs, it would have changed the case from a misdemeanor to a felony. I'm not sure about the law and how that works, but nevertheless, mm-hmm. they weren't downstairs to see it. But it was only him and her in the house.
Jessica Sutherland has a question as well.
All right.
I know me and you talked about this a little bit before, and you know, it just blows my mind that people can be so ignorant that they think just because she's blind she can't hear who's beating her. You know, I wish that she would have been on here just so she could hear my story, and you know, get, you know, some support, you know, from me just as a single mom, and you know, things I've went through. And but I mean, I can't even explain. Like I've told my family that about that story, and they're all sighted people, and they just, you know, my story, I feel like my story's crazy, but that's outrageous. And I just don't understand, you know, why people have to be so ignorant. I mean, I really just don't understand. And like I said, I wish she would have been on here and heard, you know, my outcome and what all you guys have done for me. But, you know, hopefully she'll be in contact with Ron, and, you know, maybe she'll reach out to other single moms that are blind, you know, and get some support.
Mr. President.
Absolutely. We have so many different avenues that we're going to follow with this. I mean, from domestic violence advocacy groups to our organization to anybody that is willing to listen to this story and can do something about it, including the media.
Mr. President?
Yes.
We have somebody in chat wanting to know if she was able to obtain a protective order and get any assistance with advocacy groups for domestic violence and things of that nature.
Prior to him going to court, they had a restraining order against him, a protective order against him. And at his trial, since he was let go, they lifted the protected order and everything. So he walked free and he could do what he wanted, and he could be around the children again and around her.
Diane Graves has a question.
Had a question.
Diane?
Yes, I basically had a comment. I just wanted to stress the fact that we've heard two very shocking stories today that remind us of how much work that we still have left to do. I mean, we're not talking about ignorant bystanders here. We're talking about our legal system. These are judges that are making these rulings. And it amazes me. It just blows me away that we still have that coming down from the top. And we just really need to roll up our sleeves and get to work on these kind of things.
Absolutely, Di. Our president talked about voting and how important it is. It's not only important to vote on a national level, but it's important to vote on a state level. And you see these judges' names come up, you know what to do. You know what to do.
Absolutely.
All right.
This is Michael Loff. I was just curious, do we have any numbers? Do we know any idea on a national level, or are there certain states where it's more prevalent, or do we have any data?
I am not sure, you know, and that's a good question for the Parents Division to look up for us and see if we got any statistical data on that kind of incidents, because we here in Indiana, we're going to get to it shortly, is trying to pass a parental rights bill. We have the right to parent. We have the right to raise our children. We have the right to send them to school, to comb their hair, to feed them. We have the right to walk them down the street without, you know, repercussions behind it. We have the right to divorce because, you know, things might not get along in the family and you might need to divorce and you might want to stay together, but you don't have the right to be pummeled on. You don't have the right to take the kids away from a blind person simply because they're blind. We're not going to stand for it as an organization, and we will do what we have to do in order to make sure and ensure that this doesn't happen to any other blind people under our watch.
Rick Cabona.
Yes.
President.
We also have another comment from B. Ballmer.
President. Wait a minute. President Rick Obama asked first.
Yeah, thank you. I would just say that, the statistic question is a good one, but I don't think it works. First of all, there are a lot of blind people who they don't know the National Federation of the Blind. And so these things have happened to them. Principally because they're a blind person, and frankly, they don't believe that it can be different for blind people. And I've never had this experience, but having lived through 20 years of my life not knowing what was possible for a blind person, I can see how there are blind people who they have this experience and they think, yeah, you're probably right. I probably can't do this as a blind person. So some of the discrimination happens because the blind people believe it is true. Secondly, a lot of this happens and goes unreported because there are blind people that don't know there is another option. They don't know there's an organization out there to fight with them. And when they look at the system where judges are, they don't understand blindness. They don't know where to turn. They don't know there is a National Federation of the Blind. They simply put up with it. And so I don't want us to get hung up on the statistics because I don't think they exist. The data exists because of the bias that's out there and because of the work that we have to do. The fact of the matter is other people don't have to prove that their being sighted doesn't put their kids at a disadvantage. And in fact, it does.
Absolutely.
And I can tell you that as a blind parent, I could track my kids better than the sighted parents could on the playground because they had to get up and figure out where their kids were. And I would just listen to the bells on their shoes. I didn't have to get up, you know, as long as I could track them. I didn't have to be line of sight. So I think we need to be careful about getting hung up on the data and know that a lot of blind people just aren't reporting what happens to them.
Absolutely. It's critical and important that we have this talk and we have conversations around this subject. So we're going to take, one more maybe? I think somebody
Bonnie
was
Ballmer.
Trying to get in. Bonnie Ballmer. Okay, Bonnie.
Yeah, I want to thank you for giving me a chance to speak. I am stunned that this is still occurring. My daughter and I were featured in a news story in the early 1990s because a judge had removed a child or children from a disabled parent. And I appeared on this news program with my daughter to show people that, yes, we can parent. And it doesn't matter if we're blind or in a wheelchair or what have you. We have techniques to parent. And it stuns me that this is happening almost 30 years later, that people got into this kind of bias and misinformation. And I'm just stunned, and I'm really glad that you're here to be in this person's life and in everyone's lives and to try to inform people about our capacities and our abilities rather than looking at our limitations.
Absolutely, Bonnie. Thank you for those comments. Absolutely. All right. So we're going to continue this conversation, though, on a panel discussion, and we're going to talk about the right to parent. You know, Lee Martin, are you unmuted and ready to go?
Yes, sir. I certainly am. And
all right. Lee Martin is the moderator of this panel, and we'll hear now from Lee Martin.
Well, I tell you what, we're so hot on this topic right now. This is just a great prelude into what we're going into in this next session on parents' rights. So we've been working diligently here in the state of Indiana for a parental rights bill. And the next people that you hear, you have been working steadily, patiently, and consistently with a lot of confidence on making sure that this piece of legislation is passed in the state of Indiana. So we're going to start off with our first panelist today, and it's going to be Ms. Tammy Hollingsworth, and she's going to be talking about what is Senate Bill 312. Tammy, are you ready? Is Tammy there?
She's still muted, I think.
Okay.
There we go. I think I'm here.
All right.
Okay. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Good. Okay. So good morning, everyone. You know, whenever you see a bill on the agenda, you're like, oh, let me go to the restroom. This is an important bill. And I just want you to take a second, close your eyes and think about something. If you are the parent, if you're a blind parent, think about those kids. If you are a blind grandparent, think about those grandchildren. You know, maybe you are considering having children in the future. Think about those kids, because that's what SB 312 is all about. It is to protect the rights of parents with disabilities to parent. And you know from the stories that have just been shared with you that that right is threatened in Indiana. We started fighting this battle in 2019, but we didn't get a very quick start. We were a little bit late for our General Assembly that year. But those meetings laid the groundwork for getting our bill heard in the 2020 general session. In 2020, we started earlier with a little bit larger group of Federationists, and we were very blessed to have David Niskotsky, who stepped up with us to author SB 312. And we also had a number of other sponsors in the House and the Senate as well. The bill sailed through the Committee on Disability and Children in the Senate. I mean, it really sailed through. I remember sitting there thinking, is it going to pass? Is it going to pass? And it was very amazing to see it happen. And while it was passing, many of the senators in the chamber said, please add my name to this bill. Please add my name to this bill. And it was really exciting to see that. But when we moved to the House, we could not get the chair of the House Family and Children and Human Affairs Committee. It's Representative Devin. I'm not sure just which district he belongs to, but I'm sure Lee knows. But they would not allow the bill to be heard. So the bill was kind of stopped right there last year.
We lost you again, Tammy.
We'll give her a few more minutes here.
I don't know how that happened. I didn't touch it. Okay. Are you there?
Yes.
Yeah. Are we there? Okay. I did not touch the button, so I'm not sure why it happened. But what I was saying is that we were given a great opportunity because of the start that we got on the bill to work with others to start really getting the bill going for our year, for this year, for the General Assembly in 2021. And when I say this year, it's the actually upcoming year that we're looking forward to. You know, seeing that bill fail in the House might feel like a failure, but it really wasn't. Our little bill that we started with 2 years ago got a lot of attention from other organizations interested in upholding disabled parents' rights. And so this year, as we start this process, we got involved with a coalition of groups working to get this bill passed. And we started very strong. We have met multiple times with Senator Niskotsky, and we can't thank him enough for his support of our bill. And we continue to meet with the coalition of organizations, and you'll hear from some of those today as well. And we really are preparing to see SB 312 through the legislature this year in 2021. What is SB 312? A lot of you might be like, well, what does it do? What does it do for me as a blind person? This bill protects parents from discrimination based solely on disability. Now, when we first started, we were talking about blind parents, and we still are. We don't want to lose that in the mix. But we are, in order to get the bill passed, we knew that we had to include other parents with disabilities in the bill. And so when we wrote it last year, when we rewrote it, we wanted to make sure that we were able to include that. So the right of a parent with a disability to parent their own child, with this bill, they may not be denied or restricted just based upon disability alone. Okay. And this doesn't just mean parents. This bill covers prospective parents, parents who currently exist. So like if you're thinking of adopting, it covers foster parents, or guardians. So that includes you, grandma and grandpa, maybe aunt and uncle that are raising children. It includes you. This bill is not just about some imaginary people out there. This thing is about you. It's about all of us. And it's important to all of us that this bill get passed.
It also includes custody cases.
It does. It requires the Department of Children's Services to implement disability training, awareness training for their employees. This was the stickler last year a little bit. When they got wind of it, they're kind of like, well, how are we going to do that training? But it did my heart good to hear the independent living centers and other organizations and even the NFB stand up and say, we'll make sure you get that training. Don't worry about that. That's an easy fix. It provides for the expungement, which is the removal of information pertaining to the unlawful removal of children from their caregivers, from their mom or their dad. So in the case of the ladies today who lost their children for any length of time, you know, the bad thing is right now, Indiana law allows that to stay on their record, even though it was proven to be an unacceptable reason for the child or children to be removed. That stays on your record. And we want that to go away. That's a piece of the law that I, at the time we wrote it, had not been passed anywhere else in the United States. So we're hoping that we can get it through because it's really, really important. And it does a few other things as well, but these are the most important parts of the law. Of the bill, the things that have the most teeth and that are the most important for us as parents, as grandparents, as prospective parents. So please, when we send out those emails asking for your help, don't just think that someone else is going to do it. Pick up the phone, you know, click that link, contact your representative in the legislature of Indiana at whatever level we're at that time. Pay attention to what's going on to SB 312 because it's really important and it may have to do with you. You never know. I hope it doesn't. I pray it doesn't, but it could. And one other thing I do want to address, there was a question, and I think one of the speakers later will allude to this. There was a question at the end of the last session regarding data and collection of data. We know that if we don't have proof that this is still happening, that our legislators are not going to believe us. They're going to say, oh, this isn't happening, because CPS will tell them that it's not happening. But it is happening. Obviously, we have two cases here and we have other cases that were mentioned. So please, there's a special email going out. You may have already received it. It says, tell your story. The coalition is going to talk about it further. But please, please stick with this panel. Listen to the information coming up because there are ways you can help right now. And I thank you for your time and your attention.
We have a raised hand. Do we want to take a question at this point?
I can.
Yeah.
If Lee's okay.
Go ahead.
I'm working on it. Okay. When I click unmute, there's a lag time. There you go.
Okay, here you go. Sorry it took a while. I guess the question I asked, and I don't know if anyone can come up with this answer here, but why is it still happening, especially in the 21st century? And I guess, Mom, the question is, I heard that the system for dealing with domestic violence is also broken. And I guess is... this is a major human rights issue, and I guess what, not just with the domestic violence case where this poor woman was beaten up, but also in the situation where children were taken away and things like that. You know, I've heard stories like this growing up in school. And I guess, why is there so much ignorance around this? And why is it still happening? Especially when, this is a human rights issue. This is not just a disability rights issue or a parental rights issue or a women's rights issue or anything like that. Any thoughts or comments?
Could you identify yourself?
What's that?
He wanted you to identify yourself.
Okay. Who are you? Am I still unmuted?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Oh, this is, I'm Leekshika Pinnamnani, or you might know me as Sai. So, Lee, I think I do remember you.
Yeah. Listen, let me jump in here. Our president kind of answered that question in his comments so eloquently, Dai, because of the fact that, you know, people see us as, you know, helpless and hopeless and sometimes without capacity. And sometimes we see ourselves that way simply because you lose your vision. You don't know what blind people can and cannot do, or you know, you feel like you're the only person in, you feel like you're the only person in this fight alone. And that's why we in the National Federation of the Blind help to try to educate the greater society, help to educate ourselves, help to educate, you know, anybody who's willing to listen about blindness and the capacity of blind people, the full capacity of blind people. So our president pretty much answered that question. It's going to be an ongoing issue and an ongoing fight. And we need you, Dai, and others on this call to help us fight the good fight. Lee, take it away. We've got to move on.
All right. All righty. Thank you, President Brown. And thank you very much, Tammy. So now we're going to move on to an author of this SB 312. And we want to say thank you once again, Senator David Nasciosky. And he's out of District 10. He's in the Democrat in District 10. So are you there, Senator?
Well, you do not see him yet, Lee.
Okay.
It's 8 minutes.
If the senator's here, he needs to raise his hand.
Yeah, if you are here by chance, please raise your hand. But still 8 minutes before 11.
Okay. Well,
we're not seeing him.
Okay. Well, what we're going to go ahead and do is we're a little bit ahead of schedule, but Morgan, are you there?
I am here.
Okay. We're just going to go ahead and skip a little bit forward here. We're going to be talking with Ms. Morgan Daly. She's been very steady in her efforts with this SB 312. She's been working very hard with us. And she is basically a director of public policy and system advocacy with the Indiana Statewide Independent Living Council. So we want to thank you so very much for working with all of us in this endeavor. We've been close and we're going to move much closer and hopefully get this thing passed in this next session. So Morgan, go ahead and share with us.
Sure. Hi. Thanks for the introduction, Lee. And hello everybody. Happy Saturday. Before I get started, I have just a few accessibility notes to make for you guys. So I am sharing my screen and there is a PowerPoint being presented. And I'm going to go ahead and read everything that's on the slide for access issues and purposes so that everybody can get equal information. But we also shared a hyperlink in the chat that will send you to a Google Drive folder that has accessible documents in Word, rich text format, and PDF, and then also all of those in large font. So that if you want to go ahead and access this information, you can do it that way. If there's a different format that works better for you or a different language, go ahead and shoot me an email and we'll get copies of that over to you as soon as we can. All right. So this is the link. This slide says accessibility and it gets you to the link that has accessible documents. The link is bit.ly InSilk/NFB-accessible. Another thing is I have animals in my house, so if you hear a dog barking or cats meowing, I apologize. That is the COVID world we happen to be living in. And I speak very quickly, so please, if you're having a hard time following me, hit up the chat or use some other function, and I will do my best to slow down. I will not be offended. So really quickly, my name is Morgan Daly. I'm the Director of Public Policy and Systems Advocacy with the Indiana Statewide Independent Living Council. We often go by INSILC. That is the acronym that you'll see on most of our documents. We are a disability rights and disability justice nonprofit, and we are led and directed by people with disabilities. So we use peers language, meaning all of our staff, myself included, identify as people with disabilities because we think it's really important that our peers and people with disabilities are leading the disability rights and justice movement. So our mission is to empower our peers with disabilities to lead and control their own lives. And this next slide simply says we have the power to think, speak, and decide for ourselves. And when we talk about legislation, specifically Senate Bill 312, this parental rights bill, we think it's really, really important that the disability rights community is leading this. We're so thankful for all of the work that NFB has done in bringing this bill and connecting with Senator Nieskotsky, working on this for 2 years now. And I really love seeing that there is a disability-led presence at the State House. That's something that's really important to me as an individual, and I think really important to our community. So this next slide says thank you to Senator Nieskotsky. Hopefully he's able to drop in and join us.
He is here, Morgan.
I am here.
He's here? Okay, yes. Do you want to let him?
Yes. Here? Okay, we'll go ahead and yes, we will. Thank you, Senator, for joining us. And we had basically got Morgan rolling. She knows how to put on the brakes and come back to it. So, so Senator, we want to thank you so very much, for, authoring this bill and, you know, just carrying it along, to where we are today. Without your support, we don't know where we would be with this bill. We'd still be working hard on getting it, authored. So would you share with us, sir, your reasoning for supporting this particular bill, SB 312, and the importance of it to you as you have expressed it to us previously?
Absolutely. And first of all, I do want to say thank you very much for letting me have the opportunity to speak with you for a short while today. I'm very honored to have the opportunity to be able to carry this bill, and I appreciate your thankfulness, and I think I said this before in previous meetings. I look more so towards trying to get this legislation through. That's where the real thanks would be, and then the thanks would be to, there's going to be so many people who will take part in this to make sure that we can get this done. So I am very grateful to have the opportunity to carry a bill like this, and you know, I am someone that is very diligent. I try to gain working relationships with a great host of people. That's the way I see how a bill like this is going to be able to be marshaled through. And from the very beginning, when we do put out a bill and file it, I look to have a co-author in the Senate from the majority. I've already spoken to one of the senators, and I want to speak to him a little bit more, but I'm pretty sure from the very beginning I'm going to have another name on that, which happens sometimes. And when it does, it really speaks towards the bipartisanship that goes into successful legislation. So I'm going to do my very best. And if there's any questions or anything, have we frozen?
We're still here. I'm still here.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Sometimes you maybe, it's happened before, you're talking and everyone else has gone away.
Yeah, with this COVID thing, you just don't know when that silence comes about. So, we have several people online here. Do we have any questions for the senator?
This is Michael Off. I just wanted to ask, it seems like we were quite close and just a few people not understanding the significance, right, in the legislature, and we'll figure out how best to address that, so we can complete SB 312.
Yes, that's a really good question. I think we were really close. There were a couple things that made it a little bit more difficult last time. It was a short session, so things move very, very rapidly. Sometimes committees only have a couple committee hearings, and it was partly working with that. It was also partly trying to have, I believe that we did the job necessary with the help that members of your federation had in trying to talk with Representative Dale Devon to get it here heard in the House. I think that was sufficient, but I think it's possible that DCS may have played a little bit more of a role in that than we would have thought. Representative Devon, I think, really has his heart into trying to work with children's issues. But I think sometimes, I mean, it's a good thing. I think sometimes people have trust in the departments and the people that work for them because they are by far and large doing the very best they can. But sometimes there are things that fall short. I believe this legislation is one of the areas where DCS falls short. And I think DCS was trying to assure Representative Devon that there was no need to be able to have to hear this kind of legislation. And I don't think we had enough time after they did that to come back and show him proof that in this case, this was not the case. We're going to have a long session this time. I believe the odds are very, very strong. We'll be able to get this through the Senate again, and we'll have more time on your sake, for you to be able to lobby, for me to lobby on your behalf, for us to talk with the representatives on the House side once we get this through the Senate. And so that's what we have on our side this time. We have the long session, and obviously we have something else that we don't know the outcome of yet, but we have litigation that is taking place in the state of Indiana with a family and a situation, a $3 million lawsuit, I'm sure that most of you are all aware. And I think that shows that there is very possibly a very great need for legislation like this. So we also have something else that is going to help back that up, that no, in fact, DCS can do better, and we have to try to help them do better.
Senator, this is Ron Brown. I'm the president of the state of Indiana, National Federation of the Blind of Indiana. First of all, I want to thank you for your support in SB 312 and for being a champion for this bill. We really appreciate your efforts. Earlier, we talked about some of the statistical data that House Representative Devine wanted, and we talked a little bit about that. And we had on a panel discussion about parents that have had their children taken away simply because they were blind. We've also talked about parents that had domestic violence imposed upon them simply because they were blind, and the guy got away for that reason because they said the blind person couldn't identify who it was. Nevertheless, we have had over the years a young lady on the phone today talking about 30 years ago, you know, she had her right to parent violated by the professionals wanting to take her kids away. So, you know, statistics may not be there, and I know House Representative Devine wanted that, but our national president is on the line too, and he talked about how statistics are not always necessarily there because, one, blind people don't know who to turn to if they've lost their vision and cannot understand that they can get some help out here. And so this bill is really, really important to us. Can you tell me how we can get over this statistical hurdle in the legislation in order for us to get this bill passed?
Well, I think that if we had some testimony that was similar to what you just gave, and I know those things are can be very difficult. There's a lot of different areas where those kind of things can occur just like that. But I think it's helpful to hear and maybe some more in-depth, I'm not talking about naming names or anything like that, but maybe some more in-depth testimony that can speak to the different occurrences that have taken place. You know, you've got to go through a committee. You've got to go through real people. And when you have people present and are speaking directly to these individuals, you know, every single one of them have, they have hearts. And when they hear real life stories, whether or not that they can be backed up, and sometimes it's exactly like you say, people don't know which direction to turn. People can relate to that. Some have had episodes of one type of thing that may have occurred in their life that they weren't able to have the opportunity to defend themselves in a way that is, you know, can accurately describe the situation. And, you know, those situations are extremely unfair and they can change people's lives. And, I think there's an understanding of a lot of people when they hear stories like that. That just helps to impact them, and I think make the decisions that are right decisions to move forward. So, I mean, it's going to take you are a coalition. I understand this, and that's what we have to do. We have to be kind, considerate, courteous, but we have to be relentless in our efforts to reach out to the different legislators and build our case and then succeed in our case.
Sarah Meyer has a question.
Yes, good morning, Senator. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Hello, Sarah.
Hi, and thank you so much for your support of this bill and this really important topic. I'm blind and I'm not a parent, but I have a sister who's blind, who's a parent, and I would someday love to be a parent as well. So this is really close to my heart. I am wondering, so I'm still trying to understand kind of the process that this bill has gone through already. It sounds like it passed through a committee in the Senate and then went to a committee in the House and needed to be heard through the House.
Yes.
Please correct me if I'm wrong on that. I guess what I'm wondering, is there a companion bill in the House? And also, you know, now that we're in election season, is this something that would be worthwhile, even though it's not currently up for being voted on, is it something that we could say to our potential representatives and senators, could we reach out to them and say, hey, this is an important topic. If it comes up, would you please support it? Is that a worthwhile endeavor to engage in?
Yes, I think it would be. I don't think that is trying to be political about it in any manner, to try to reach out to Representative Devon and try to, if he should be reelected, to try to get a commitment from him that it is how important this is. I think that is a very good idea. And then it wouldn't be a bad idea. Also, he is going to be, I believe, in a close race. He had a close race 2 years ago, and the person running against him is Don Westerhausen. He had just retired this year, but he's a doctor and he's a cardiologist. And just to speak to him, if he were to be successful and win, that doesn't mean they're going to make him the chairman of the Family and Children. It would, I don't know if Democrats will get the majority in the House, but the whole thing is to, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea just letting him know that this bill is out there. And would you consider also being one of the persons that would, hopefully become a champion? Would you be elected? That's not playing politics whatsoever. That's just lobbying and speaking about your issue. But I'd reach that way. I think it's very important. And they should know that, that this bill that you intend to come forward with this again. It did not get heard in the House, and there was a companion bill in the House also. And, I imagine, you may be looking at that again. It is often that takes place when, people will try to, different groups of people will try to put forward, legislation, both houses, so they can get a start. And so if it starts in one chamber or the other, it kind of gives it, a little extra, I think a little extra boost, a leg up. I don't know, again, the author in the House, I think that was Representative Greg Porter. I'm pretty certain that he went to Representative Devon. And so, again, Representative Devon chose not to hear it at the beginning in the House. And, you know, I think you could probably ask him, you know, if he would also hear that from the beginning also. It's not going to matter to me if they're both companion bills and we make sure they're the same legislation. We're just trying to each help and enable each other to try to get this thing started on both sides at the beginning.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
There's no other hands up at this time.
Okay. Well, Senator, we just want to thank you once again, District 10. And I just want to thank you again. We do have one of our members that is in your district that spoke with you in the past, and just want to Kane Brolin that you spoke to in that particular area for this particular bill. So just want to let you know that we do have constituents up in that area that's a part of this organization. So thank you so very much for coming with us. Is there anything else you want to leave us with today, sir?
Yes, just finally, I believe my legislative assistant, Shawnee, may have already reached out to try to put together another voice call next week. I want to apologize because I thought we actually had one put together last Wednesday. And I probably did not relay all the information properly to Shawnee, but the meeting, there was a meeting set. It was set with the legislative person, Andrew Hedges, that you had been working with last year. It was set with a person from the Hoosier Environmental Press, Steve Key. And I take the blame. I did not convey properly that we were also supposed to include you. So we were going to talk about with this role with the ombudsman and how the expungement of records. So I want to make sure we get this correct also. So if it's sometime next week works, wonderful. If we have to, as soon as possible, the bottom line, we will be talking again to make sure we get this accurate and where everyone can agree.
Okay, well, we will definitely have the team get this all together with you. It'll be Morgan. And we look forward to this particular meeting coming up. So all hands will be on deck then.
Okay, I appreciate very much again the opportunity to talk with you. I am going to probably leave after this. I have a day filled and planned with my grandson, so I'm getting ready to go pick him up and have some fun.
Well, just go have fun, and we appreciate you, and thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Everyone have a wonderful day. Take care.
Okay, thank you. So we're going to resume our conversation with Ms. Morgan, let her do Morgan Daly and allow her to complete her presentation. Are you there, Morgan?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. And thank you so very much for putting the brakes on and allowing that presentation there.
And that looks like perfect timing to me. I have a slide that says, thank you. The disability community appreciates your leadership, guidance, and support. And you stepped right in. I think it's really nice that in a time where turning on the news and hearing about our elected officials on either side can be rather frustrating to have someone in our state who is such a good supporter and someone who's like really taking a lead on this for us. So, all right. So really quickly, I'm going to talk about what exactly does the Parents with Disabilities Bill do. Tammy actually did a great job explaining this earlier if you were here about 30 minutes ago. But the bill does three main things. The first is it acknowledges that biological, adoptive, and foster parents with disabilities have a right to be free from discrimination in parenting. Two, it allows past discriminatory charges or findings made by the Indiana Department of Child Services. And actually, this is a misstatement. I believe it's any discriminatory charges that are made by DCS or by anyone, whether that is another spouse or another individual or another judge in a previous case that's being appealed. When those charges are made on the basis of disability, it allows those to be expunged. And the third is that it mandates disability awareness training for the Indiana Department of Child Services. So those are the three main things that this bill does. And if you're familiar with the Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADA, you know that actually this first part, we already have a right to be free from discrimination in parenting. And so really this bill is just restating that at the state level and then adding the allowing of expungement of cases that have been made through discrimination and then also providing disability awareness training for DCS. The bottom of this slide, there is a link and it will give you information on the whole bill so you can go and read it in its entirety. You'll just want to go off of the click off the summary page and read full text. Okay, this slide says, why do we need this bill? And I feel like I do not need to explain this after listening to Jessica this morning and the other folks who shared about instances of discrimination that have occurred based on their disability and their blindness in parenting, whether that be by a spouse, a judge. We know that it happens within the Department of Child Services a lot. So I'm going to go ahead and read these examples on this slide. But I feel like as a community of people with disabilities, we are well aware of what these problems look like. The first example is, because of my low vision, I have a hard time reading some of my daughter's homework assignments. I wrote a note to the teacher asking if he could please provide electronic or large print format so that I can assist her. The teacher contacted the Department of Child Services with concerns that I am unfit to parent. The second example is, the hospital would not let us leave with our newborn child because they mistakenly believed that we were not capable because we are both blind. We are incredible parents. And my third very sad example is that my new neighbors called the Department of Child Services because I use a wheelchair. My children live in a very loving home and we provide them with everything they need and more. Unfortunately, most people think that this type of discrimination is a past issue that no longer exists. But as we heard earlier, it's still very, very prevalent in many of our lives. And there is a link at the bottom of this slide, and it is a link to an Indy Star article, and it is about the lawsuit that Senator Nizgotsky was referring to. This is a $3 million case against the Department of Child Services for discrimination against a parent with a disability and other false pretenses claims that are falling under the ADA, stating that the child is removed from the home through discrimination. But I urge you, if you have the time, to go through those articles to read about that case. And we are actually hopeful that Representative Devon may see, oh, this is $3 million of taxpayer money because this keeps happening. Maybe we do need some type of training in the Department of Child Services and we do need to pass this bill. Okay, so this slide says what happened with the Parents with Disabilities Bill in 2020. Tammy gave a great explanation of this earlier, as well as Senator Nizgotsky. And then Sarah chimed in and explained it well as well. So Senator Nizgotsky authored the bill in the Senate and Representative Porter offered the bill in the House. They were identical. The bill passed unanimously in the Senate committee, which is for family and children. And then also passed unanimously on the Senate floor, which is actually pretty amazing and doesn't happen that often, which was very exciting to see. Unfortunately, Representative Devon, although many of our advocates, I know Lee and Amber, met with Representative Devon to try and convince him to hear the bill, but he was not willing to do so because we don't have data. And in a few minutes, I'm going to explain a little more about data. Okay, so this slide says, don't worry, we haven't given up. So NFB and NSILC and a bunch of other advocates with disabilities have been working with this coalition and collaborating on ways to pass this bill in the 2021 legislative session. Senator Nizgotsky has been wonderful about meeting with us and finding ways to amend the bill that makes it more helpful for our parents with disabilities. And so there's two ways that you can get involved today. The first one is that NSILC runs a legislative advocacy workshop series. This is free and virtual. It's on October 22nd, November 19th, and December 17th. And essentially, the purpose of the advocacy series is to teach our peers with disabilities about the legislative process, to develop messaging, and then allow our peers to lead the conversation at the State House, right? And so we're going to bring bills to you that are disability related or that you're interested, help kind of navigate that lobbying process, connect folks with legislators, and then allow people with disabilities to really be the voice on these types of legislation. There are two links here and they're also in the chat. You can go to the Eventbrite page at NSILC Register, or there's an NSILC Register Accessible link, and that will take you to accessible documents. If you are interested in learning kind of how the political process works, we would love to have you join us. It's a little confusing and convoluted, and I don't think we have time today to cover it. But that will happen in the workshop series. And Lee will be joining us on October 22nd, specifically to talk about this bill. And then it is a bill that will follow through December 17th and then all the way through session. Okay. And this is the most important thing that you can do today. So if you don't hear anything else from me, please hear this. We need folks to share their stories. The legislators need to hear from our parents with disabilities. I listened to Jessica this morning and I was so incredibly angry that I didn't know what to do with myself, right? And we need legislators to hear that. So we can't get data, and we can't get data because the data doesn't exist. Organizations, DCS specifically, is not going to collect information on times that they are personally discriminating against our parents with disabilities. In fact, when we asked, they don't collect demographic data on whether or not a parent identifies with a disability at all. So even if we could get that data, they're not collecting it. What we need to do is we need to hear from our parents, because numbers can show you that 25 people were discriminated against this year and had their children taken away. But they don't tell you how long your children were taken away. Jessica said her daughter was away from February 2019 to this current August. I think if legislators who have children heard that, they would be shocked and appalled and understand why we really, really need this bill. So you can click on this link. It's also in the chat. It's https://bit.ly/insilk. Share your story, and that's going to take you to a Survey Monkey, and it's going to ask you for your contact information. It's going to give you more information about why we're collecting stories. It's going to ask you to sign a consent and release form, and then it's going to ask you to share more information. Please know that you do not have to sign a consent and release form if you don't want to. We want people to maintain autonomy over their stories because we really want you to be the one sharing your experiences. But if you are afraid of retaliation or would like to remain anonymous, we're happy to share the story on your behalf. We'll just need you to sign that form to do that. But the survey will let you go through without signing it, just to let everybody know. And this is my contact information that says, thank you for joining us. To learn more and engage in InSilk advocacy efforts, do contact me. My name is Morgan, and my email is mdaly, D-A-L-Y, @insilk.org. And I'm actually going to go back because I'm going to beg you all to share your story one more time. I think either this morning or this afternoon, there will be an email that comes out with this link and more information. If you're more comfortable talking on the phone or sending me an email with your story, you can do that. You can call us, whichever way you want to get that to us. And then we can help you develop that in ways to share it with legislators so that we can hopefully get this bill passed this session. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
While we wait for hands to go up, we have sent out that email on our listserv once already, and it will probably go out to our convention. Anybody that's registered, it will probably go out to them later this afternoon. So we've already started the process of sending that email out to all of our members.
Excellent. Thank you.
That's in form of a toolkit, correct?
Yeah, they sent us a toolkit, which included an email template, and we sent that out. And Sarah Myers has a question.
Yes, good morning. I'm sorry, I feel like I'm talking a lot this morning. I'm just a very inquisitive person. Thank you so much, Morgan, for this presentation. Thank you, Tammy. I really appreciate, the efforts that everyone is putting forth. This might be more of a question for our tech team. I would like to access the links, like to the PowerPoints and, like to these workshops and different things like that. I haven't been able to, go directly to the links for these things from within Zoom, and I'm wondering how, if there's a way to do that. Right now I'm using JAWS, but I've also used the Zoom app, and when I double tap or click on the link, they're not opening. So I'm wondering if
can we ask the tech team? You can get a hold of them, get a hold of Chris, and you can get a hold of Michael, and they could answer that question. So do you have a direct question as we are talking about this particular topic?
No, I just thought I would raise it in case other people were having trouble with that too. So.
Lee.
Okay, well, they can get a hold of, yes, go ahead.
May
okay.
I, May I go ahead and answer her question?
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead.
I know from a computer user's view, if you tab through, it will let you press enter on the link as long as you're tabbing through the messages, because they have them in a list view, all messages, and then as you tab across your screen, it will let you click on each message, and it will bring up the link.
And also, this is Michael Offit. A lot of it, right, that's just learning Zoom, but we will make any documentation available from Morgan or any other presenters on the website, just as we build the audio archives. So we encourage folks to go to NFB-NM.
Raymond has a question.
Okay, well, okay, Raymond, go ahead with your question as it's related to the topic at hand. Thank you.
Yeah, Morgan, I just wanted to know, did you want positive stories as well, like people who are, you know, successfully raising their children to show to the senators and things like that?
I think we can collect those. I think what is going to be most impactful with legislators is folks who have experienced discrimination, but I think it is always a good idea to have these positive stories as well, so that folks who may already have these ableist preconceived notion that parents with disabilities can't raise their children, we kind of have a backup. We can tell them, right? But we can also say, oh, look, here are these examples of excellent parents. So sure. If you have folks who want to share those stories, we will put them in the story bank and have those ready to share.
We have another question from 3231.
Hey, Chris, guys, it's Jim Quinn. How are you? How's everybody?
Hi, Jim.
Hey, wanted to say thank you for allowing me to be here. One of the things that I believe might help is that there are other states that have already passed these bills and have parental rights in place. Might that be something to take to the representative to say that this is not something that's isolated, so he can see for himself that there is kind of a countrywide push for this sort of thing? That might be something you can do. Is that a thought?
Well, Jim, I would like to state that the National Federation of the Blind of Indiana has already done that in our building up for this. Say our national office has been very consistent with us, particularly at the initial phases of all of this. So, yes, we have done that, and we've studied it, we presented it, and we've crafted this piece of legislation with all of that in mind.
Absolutely.
So there are no other hands at this time.
Nancy, it's Nancy CB66 in the chat says that they have a question.
Let me find her.
Or can we just read the question from the chat?
You didn't post
okay,
it.
Okay, go ahead. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. My question is, how far back do you want the stories to go? Because, like, do you want them to pass 10 years ago that it happened, or do you want more up to date?
So the question is, how far back do we go historical-wise to share their stories?
This is Morgan with any story. I think time is only going, I'm not sure it's going to be super, super relevant. So if it's recent, great. If it's 10, 15, 20 years ago, I still think that's good information to share with folks so that they know this was happening and it's continuing to happen.
So this is Ron Brown again. One of the things that we, you know, in the Federation, this is not our first rodeo. And so we do a lot of legislative work here in the state as well as around the country. But one of the things that I think the senator said was very important, and that is that we need to get a hold of the House Representative DeWine as well as his rival that's running against him. We need to share our information with the rival that was running against him. I don't think he knows. I think we need to see if he will back us, and we need to put some of our efforts into pushing him to get elected if he's willing to support us. If he supports us, we support him. And DeWine needs to know that. DeWine held up the process. We've been working on this process for 2 years, and he held up the process the first time. He's not going to be the one that kills our bill the next time. So as far as I'm concerned, we get together our team, and we bring everybody down to the state house, and we tell our stories, not only in writing, but in person. And he see canes and dogs and people that are living these truths and that are real people with real issues. And we're going to make sure that he knows
that our lives matter.
President Brown, I think that's great information there. Also, DCS had a big hand in it as well. So yep. We will be working on that. And I would say that our constituents up in the South Bend area, District 10, you know, that's your area. That's where you'll be voting for those particular candidates. So we will be talking with you as well. So, Morgan, did you have any more to share with us?
I mean, I'll just sound like a broken record and repeat myself that if you have experienced any type of discrimination in parenting, or your friends have, or your family has, or people in your communities, please ask them to share their stories. Are successful when legislators see their constituents there in person, giving testimony and explaining why it's important to them and the stories we're able to do that. I also wanted to let folks know that I know coming to the State House in person during the week can sometimes be a hassle. We have jobs and have things going on. We don't also get here. So if you would like to record some type of video, I can ask Senator Nizgoski for permission to share that in the committee. If you'd like to provide written testimony, I'm happy to go and share that on your behalf. Let us know how we can support you and what you need from us to make this happen.
Okay, Morgan, could you give one more time your contact information, please?
Sure. So my email is mdaily@insilk.org. It's mdaily@insilk.org. You can also contact me on my cell phone. You can call me or text me, whichever you're more comfortable with. That's area code 219-510-2097. And I'll throw that information in the chat as well.
Okay. Well, we certainly appreciate it and all the work that you do in advocacy and working with the National Federation of the Blind as we overcome these obstacles. So thank you once again for your time and presenting. So we'll go on to our next speaker today or presenter. And this is with the National Federation of the Blind Indiana Convention resolution. This is our resolution regarding parental rights. So we'll have Mr. Chris Hollingsworth as our presenter.
Good morning, everybody. We have several resolutions this year, and I am assuming that when I read this, then we will take a quick vote on this resolution, and we would vote on the resolutions as I read them throughout the day at different points. This resolution is Resolution 2020-03, calling upon the Indiana State Legislators to protect the rights of parents who are blind. Whereas blind individuals continue to face unfair, preconceived, and unnecessary societal biases, as well as antiquated attitudes regarding their ability to successfully parent their children, and whereas blind individuals face these biases and preconceived attitudes in family and dependency law proceedings in which the allocation of parental responsibilities and parenting time are at stake in public and private adoption, guardianship, and foster care proceedings, and whereas, because of these societal biases and antiquated attitudes, children of blind parents are unnecessarily being removed from their parents' care or being restricted from enjoying meaningful time with their parents. And whereas children are being denied the opportunity to enjoy the experience of living in loving homes with blind parents or other blind caregivers. And whereas the Parents with Disabilities Bill, Senate Bill 312, failed to pass during the 2020 session of the Indiana General Assembly, be it hereby resolved by the National Federation of the Blind of Indiana, gathered in convention on this 10th day of October 2020, that this organization strongly urged the Indiana General Assembly to pass the legislation that protects our right to parent in declaring that we are competent adults until proven otherwise by evidence rather than fear of blindness. Be it further resolved that this organization urged the Indiana Department of Child Services to stamp out discrimination against parents who are blind by implementing training programs that include blind parents and blindness advocates to educate their caseworkers in the rights and capabilities of persons who are blind. And be it further resolved that these agencies be required to expunge any overturned decisions or reversed rulings from the file of any proceeding in which the allocation of parental responsibilities and parenting time are at stake in public and private adoption, guardianship, custody, or foster care proceedings.
And does the resolution committee want us to do pass this resolution?
The resolution committee does recommend it to pass this resolution.
All right. All right. Here's what we're going to do. I need the tech team to have some counters because I'm going to ask the people to raise their hands, and we'll give the tech team a few minutes to count those votes to affirm this resolution. And then I'm going to ask people to put their hands down, and then I'm going to ask those who are opposed to this resolution to raise their hands. So we're going to give you a few minutes. The resolution committee recommends do pass. All in favor, signify by raising your hand. And tech team, Mike, I'm going to give you and those who are working with you an opportunity to count the hands. And then we'll, and you let me know once you've got them all counted, then we'll ask for opposition.
All right.
Mr. President, can we give away a door prize while we're counting those raised hands?
Yeah, also, we can in a minute. I just need to make sure everybody got this, this process. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, please do not lower your own hands. Let us do it upon completion. It would work better.
There you go. The tech team will lower your hand. Just keep them raised.
I have a quick question. We as co-hosts aren't able to raise our hand.
Mm-hmm.
How would you like for us to place our votes?
And you can say them out loud then, and I'll count them.
Well, then I say aye.
All right. Thank you.
And that's Abby.
Yep. Gotcha.
Lisa
says,
go ahead.
Hollingsworth says aye, Tammy.
All right. And Lee?
Lee says aye.
That's three. Okay.
Chris Hollingsworth says aye.
And it's four. Okay.
And so far we have 14 raised hands. 15.
15 has her hand raised, but she can't raise it. I got hers. 16.
Yeah, we're staying at 14. That seems to be stopping right there.
Yeah, I'm not seeing any new hands.
All right. You guys can lower those hands. There's another one more. Just came in.
Computer just said 17.
Maybe if anyone doesn't know, if there's anyone listening who doesn't know how to, again, we'll remind you, on the telephone, *9. On your iPhone, tap on the more button, which is on the far right, and then double tap raise your hand. And on your computer, Alt-Y, or Mac, Command-Y.
Excellent. Thank you. And the tech team will lower your hands, please. The tech team will lower your hands, so you don't have to worry about that.
Okay, we're stopping at 17.
Okay.
18.
Plus the four I got, so that's 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. 18, yeah. All right. Okay, we can lower the hands. And those in opposition of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Wait till I get all the hands lowered.
Okay, let me know then. Sorry.
I think there's a lower all hands function. I'm not sure.
I didn't see one.
It's in the more options menu.
Here, there. They should all be down now.
Okay. Excellent. All right, let's go with those who are in opposition of the resolution, please raise your hand, and I'll give you a few minutes.
You should hear some music.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Yeah, we're staying at zero. Doesn't look okay. Like there's any opposition.
So I'm going to assume that we have a consensus to pass the resolution. The resolution passes. All right, thank you, guys.
Okay.
All right. Lee,
I got a door prize.
Hang on. We got a few more. Lee, okay. You got something?
Nancy said something about she had her hand up. I don't know if that means she was opposing or.
She was not opposing, I'm sure.
Okay, I wouldn't think so, but I just seen that in chat, so I wanted to address it.
All right, we're in good shape. Lee, what else you got?
Okay, I just want to thank the committee that's been working diligently on this legislation. It is all our responsibility to make sure that these issues that are being addressed, that this is your responsibility as well. So we want you to know that there are different ways that you can get out to contact your legislators. Many of you should already know your constituents in your area who represent you. You would want to contact those individuals. If you don't have that information, you can go to iga.in.gov. Once again, that's iga.in.gov.
www.in.gov. And another place that you can go is to the National Federation of the Blind Newsline here in Indiana. You can go to our state information channel, and there is a great list of all your state representatives and senators there, even your national representatives. So you can go there to those places. You can always Google up Indiana state representatives, as well as information about Indiana government. So there's a plethora of ways that you can go. You can also call down to the state house, to the House side and Senate side, and get all the information you need to contact your representatives. So please do your due diligence. We want to get this bill passed. We want to make sure that these realities that we've heard today, and there's many, many more that we haven't heard of and probably never will hear of. But because what we do as the National Federation of the Blind, we will continue to advocate for our citizens. I also want to say, reiterate what President Mark Riccobono indicated earlier. You can go to blindparents.org and find out a plethora of information there as well. So, President Brown, without any further ado, this wraps up this session.
Excellent. Excellent session, Lee. Thank you. You and the parental rights team and those of us who have been working on that bill. Great information this morning. Now, Tammy, let's have that door prize and then we're going to wrap
goodness.
Things up.
Thank goodness. You know what? We haven't hardly given anything away this morning, not hardly anything, because the person who won the door prize last time did not claim that $50.
Oh,
and
my
so,
goodness, what a way
yeah,
to end the
I'm
morning.
Telling you. I'm telling you. So you, this is a $50 door prize. If you are here and you win this door prize, you'll need to contact Micah at the information in the chat. So if you are here, your name is Karen Dowdy. Karen Dowdy. So if
Karen
you are here,
Karen,
you need to let Micah know that you are present and accounted for during the lunch break, and
absolutely,
that way we can get that money to you.
We have a jam-packed agenda this afternoon, so we're going to let you go a few minutes early to go and get your lunch. We will reconvene at 1 o'clock. We've had a great morning session. Great to hear from our national president. We're going to hear from him tonight at the banquet. For this morning session, we are adjourned until 1 o'clock. Thank you.